Hey, welcome everybody to another Pacific Novel Project podcast. This is our first workshop of the new year 2020, and I know we've been away a lot. We shut down for November, National Writing Month, and you know, the holidays. So we only got one podcast out during that time, but we're ready, back, and going to roll on. And the we is me, Jason Keith. We're workshopping The Ghost of Silver Creek, my novel, on the second draft. And the other person in the we is Steve Childress. And we're workshopping Hollywood Dreams, a noir detective novel. It takes place in L.A.
Yeah, I'm here in 2020, but there ain't no Bobwa Walters. Woohoo!
I'm not sure what that means. Does that mean Bobwa Walters is dead? Wait,
no, you know, this is 2020, and I'm Bobwa Walters. Okay, I'm totally dating myself, but damn.
I don't know, man. I'm older than you.
Yeah, so which means you should get it. You should totally get it right now, but you don't.
I remember her on 2020.
Oh, okay.
But she's not on 2020 now.
I know, but this is 2020 now.
Okay.
I totally interrupted that, sidelined it, and
that's all right.
I've ruined it. I ruined everything.
I think we haven't had a Barbara Walters sidebar yet, so that's okay.
Oh, okay. Cool. I'm glad it works out then.
All right. Hey, if this is not your first time here, and it probably is, you know the drill. Me and Steve, we just go right into workshopping. Sometimes we stray to other topics, but in general, we just get right to it. No fancy intros, no music, no John Williams scores. Let's do it. Steve's going first, which means we're going to talk about me.
Yes, we are going to talk about The Ghost of Silver Creek. Leading up to where we're at in this part was Charles and Avis heading back to Charles's ranch, if I remember correctly. And Avis and Charles kind of have a talk about her powers and like she's starting to come into herself a little bit with having lost her memory and kind of, you know, talking about her glowing disposition.
What page are we starting on?
We are starting on 147 at the very bottom. Oh, wait, no. 146 at the very bottom. Yeah, they're talking about the Brodies and what the Brodies' interest is in the lands that the Nestors are occupying and trying to establish as their lands. I'm just going to leave off with on this page here at the bottom of 146. Avis refers to Cranston Brodie as being a rabbit and a true raptor circling unseen above him. And that was kind of in juxtaposition of kind of Cranston being kind of more mentioned as like the eagle or the hawk above, you know, rabbits as the Nestors, right? Am I correct on that?
Yeah, she's thinking, oh, this is what he thinks, but she's starting to think, I'm kind of badass. I think he's mistaken.
Okay.
He's okay. Not what he thinks he is. And I'm here and he doesn't know it.
So she sees herself as more of the raptor over him because she's kind of hot-headed in that way of like she has these powers but she doesn't know what to do with them yet, but she still feels it sets her apart.
Yeah, she has a growing confidence. And you know, she's realizing she's not human. Everybody else is just human. Maybe I got to rewrite that again.
No, I got it. I think you're fine. I'm just riffing here, man.
Okay.
No, it's a lot clearer than it used to be. I totally, yeah. I'm on board with it.
Okay.
Okay. Page 147, the top of section 27. It was past midday when Avis and Charles returned to the McCann homestead. The woman counted three new silhouettes under the midday sun. The adults were gathered around two of them. And a third stood off to the side leaning against a wagon. So they're coming back to the McCann ranch after having gone back to Charles's homestead. I have to say, I like that we get to see more of Remy. back at the McCann Ranch, and kind of more of her wanting to fight demeanor of like not wanting to just bow down to the Brodies because, or not be so scared of the Brodies because they just happen to be rich assholes with lots of guns and hired guns and whatnot. So I like that we get to see more of her in this revision. And the description she wore a buckskin jacket and pants like an outdoorsman. Much like Avis was dressed, Rebecca, Remy McCann, cradled a rifle in her arms and her eyes had the same angry look as her mother, though unlike Francine, there was little room for forgiveness in them. So, I mean, just from that description, you get kind of more of a sharper, colder kind of demeanor or look in her eyes and probably even the way she carries herself.
Cool.
That I skipped a page down for that because I wanted to start with something positive like we always should. Like I don't always do. Sometimes I just go linear on the comments.
You know, I just like to go in order.
Yeah, you know, I usually end up going in order, but I was like, you know what? Let's try something different today.
Okay. Well, you got to let us know when you change pages because I actually didn't know you'd skip to another page. I was like, where's he reading that?
Sorry, that was page 148. All right, so page 147. Let's see here. She looked back at the crowd and picked out Ferris by his bright red shirt. And I did a edit here. How I don't know how the H got.
Yeah, I see it.
I didn't like the original end of the sentence with the left lean of his body. I just had an awkward flow to it. So I did that suggestion.
We'll revisit.
See, all eyes were on them as they pulled into the McCann yard. And Ava shifted uncomfortably in her seat under the scrutinization, though she knew it was Charles they turned to. Yeah, she looked back at the crowd and picked out Ferris by his bright red shirt. But they're riding into the McCann Ranch, aren't they?
Yeah, I think I was thinking they were looking at them and she was looking back at them, but that does read like she was looking backward.
Yeah, I had the feeling that they were like writing out is kind of how that made me feel. So I thought I'd just make a mention of it there. I had to get my ground like where it was like, oh, what made me actually really feel that? But that was where it was at. Yeah. So yeah, I just kind of screwed me up on the orientation of the peeps and directions and stuff.
All right.
And then let's see, at the bottom of 147, I'm going to start a little bit back before the actual sentence I highlighted. Ava sensed it in him as well, and it existed alongside a desire to reject those attributions. Charles was a natural leader and had suffered the unintended consequences as such. Whatever else he was, Charles was also a man of immense loneliness. I'd normally cite this as kind of being telling, but the reader has a lot to draw on from Charles and his mannerisms so far in the book. So this as an observation from Avis, I feel works.
Yeah, I think I could probably reword it so it is direct observation from her.
Okay. Page 148. Avis examined the man the Nestors had gathered around. He was not an extraordinary man, handsome in the rough sort of way. Older men become so. Hang on, I totally read that wrong.
Oh, okay.
Handsome in the rough sort of way, older men become so.
I see you clicking all over the place.
He had intelligent brown eyes and hair. He had last shaved a day ago, and his stubble was streaked gray. He was shorter than the others, but not significantly so. A silver star was pinned to his black vest, which he wore over a blue shirt. The other two were women. One was about Charles' age. So was this Tig Cooper riding in on the wagon with someone?
No, he's standing there.
Yeah, it was just, I don't know. Yeah, because it goes from Charles Navis. And then Ava's examining the nesters that had gathered around. And then, yeah, then the next character description comes in. And it was just, I don't know when Teague came in or if Teague was already there.
Yeah, he was one of the guys in the, one of the people that the nesters were talking to when they were riding up.
I think I totally missed that then.
Well, I'm going to put in here, work on transition.
Yeah, because the woman counted three new silhouettes under the midday sun. So that would have been Charles, Avis, and Teague?
No.
Okay, so that would have been...
Teague, Francine, and Remy. She's describing people she's looking at.
Okay, yeah. Kind of three new silhouettes under the midday sun. Okay.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's because Teague is old to us. She hasn't met Teague at this point.
No, she hasn't met Teague. Something didn't translate for me.
Okay. I'll revisit.
Let's see here. Hang on a sec. Okay, so I noticed that Avis and Ferris kind of have a thing going on, whether it's just, you know, Avis being polite, but Ferris definitely seems like he's, you know, in hot pursuit. So this is where she also, at the bottom of 148, this is where she also officially meets Teague Cooper, or Cooper Teague. And I like that he apologized for an unspecified offense, according to Avis. And she was, you know, she went off all polite, you know, oh, no forgiveness needed, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I like his reaction when Keela comes around the corner of the barn. It's pretty much on point with, like, everybody else's reaction. Just, you know, they all become a codfish. And I love that she answers, he does not belong to me. Well, he does not answer to, it belongs to you. And Teague, what a dick, man. Just totally like calling her horse an it. I mean, come on, man. If he wasn't sure about the gender, he could have just been like, the horse belonged to you? But no, he resigned it to an it. What a dick.
Yeah.
And I actually like that Charles chimes in. Yes, he's a real horse. Said with some impatience. As Elsa and Ginny ran by them on their way to greet the Palomino. I don't know. I wanted to call her Ginny for some reason, but yeah, Ginny. And then, yeah, then they get talking about the Brodies again, which par for the course. I mean, that's pretty much the subject matter in which, you know, is hot on everybody's mind at this point in the story with the characters and all that. And Teague has no evidence. So he's like, all I got is he said, she said bullshit. And then he gets from Avis that she had seen them, but hadn't seen any faces. Mm.
Where are you? I feel like you just jumped.
I was on 149, and then I get to 150. James was like, you think we burned it ourselves? No, sir, I do not, Teague said, and James seemed to relax a bit as the sheriff's address recognized him and his place in the discussion. I might have jumped a little bit too far with that comment, but let's see.
Oh yeah, I just didn't know you had shifted pages.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, I was already at the bottom of 149 when I was starting, so I was like, I should have said 150 though. I should have, but I did now. 150. There you go. Oh yeah, and then Avis, she's all, I saw it, Avis said, and this is on 150. And Teague turned his head, his attention to the small woman. Did you, Teague? Asked as Aunt Avis nodded. What were you doing out here at that time of morning? What does that matter? James blurted in her defense. Teague raised his hands, just trying to get a full picture. Never mind. What did you see, ma'am? Yeah, I mean, what's it to him if she was out there in the morning? I mean, she wasn't the one burning barns. I mean, come on.
Or was she?
Let's see here. Then Avis recounted the events of the morning, excluding the reason behind her early morning adventure. And then Teague listens to her. Let's see, when Avis was done, he took off his hat and wiped his brow on his shirt sleeve before he turned over in his hands as if he was here to investigate how it had come upon his head. I tried making a suggestion on this sentence to make it read a little clearer, but I abandoned ship, and I thought I'd leave that to you.
Okay. He turned it. Should have been like he turned it over or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I wasn't sure. I was like, you know what? I was like, I might totally change what he was going for here. I was like, I'm just going to highlight it and just be like, hey, bro, need some TLC.
I think I left the subject out of that sentence.
Yeah, I think so. It's all right, though. I do it all the time. Okay, then, yeah, 151. Teague comes back to Avis. You didn't see any faces. No. Did you see their brands? I was not close enough for that. But you tell their steam horses were high quality. When Avis nodded, Teague said, in the dark. Avis can see in the dark, James chimed in. I loved that because I'm sure Teague's just like, yeah, sure she can, pal. Yeah, because Teague doesn't even turn to the boy. He just raises his brows in question, and Avis nods. She's like, oh, yeah, I see the dark. the barn was already alight when you showed up, Teague asked. Yes. So, yeah, I like this questioning here just because, I mean, they kind of give away, like they're trusting Teague a lot here with information. I mean, but it's also kind of like, you know, Teague's probably also at the same time going, you can't make this shit up. you know, so he's probably just like dismissing it, going, ah, whatever. You know, you guys been smoking that wacky tobacco growing out there in the mountains or something. But yeah, I mean, he puts his hat back on and he says he's going to keep looking into it, but there's not enough to arrest anyone. And that Brody lawyers could keep it from going to a court or a jury. And then, then they ask about Andy Brody on 152. About him bragging about burning down Charles's place, and he just says that, hey, it's just because he's bragging about it doesn't mean he did it. Which I'm kind of sitting there going, okay, if you really wanted to, you could pull him in, but I get your thing about the lawyers, though, too. He'd have him like there for a couple hours, and then he'd be out and about again, just like they do today.
Yeah.
Yeah, not, you know, as much as some shit changes, some shit just stays the same. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's sad, really. Ugh, hard truths.
Yeah, it makes it easy when you don't have to make stuff up.
I know, right? Yeah. Oh. That makes this a historical fiction. Ah! And they all turn to Remy, and Remy's back again, her brown eyes glittering in the afternoon sun. And she wants to take the fight to the Brodies. And then Teague is like, I wouldn't recommend that. And I like this, I like this spot with Remy here, where she's like, okay, well, if you're not going to do anything, you do nothing, Sheriff. You know, maybe I put some gloves on, you know. It's kind of like in Rocky, what was that, Rocky V with Tommy Gunn, where he's all, you know, Tommy Gunn like beats up his kid, and then he walks up to Tommy and he's like, hey, try knocking me down. You know, yeah. I mean, it'd be because at this point, Remy going by herself would be kind of like Rocky trying to fight Drago. I mean, she might win, but, you know, she's going to come away with some serious head trauma.
Maybe.
I don't know where I was going with all that, but it sounded good at the time.
Oh. I was trying to recall details of Rocky V.
Yeah, the really scary thing is I haven't seen that movie in forever.
You know, Drago wasn't in Rocky V. I think he had double Rocky references there.
Yeah, I jumped a movie back for the, okay, for the Brodies. Because, I mean, Tommy Gunn, he was dumb. Even Tommy at his best wasn't going to hurt Rocky at his worst. Okay, let's see here. Back on track. Okay. I would not recommend that, Remy, Teague said. I can't prove it's the Brodies attacked you, but I can't prove you attacked them either. The sheriff's right, Remy Charles said. The best strategy is to prepare our defenses and let the Brodies make the first mistake. Give them enough rope to hang themselves. Yoo-hoo! Isn't that the same strategy you used in the war, Remy said? The same strategy that got Pa killed? Damn, Remy pulls no punches. I like that. I like that she, you know, toe-to-toe with Charles, man. I like it.
Yeah, Remy's gonna be a wild card in this story. She's gonna be kind of kick-ass.
I like that. She needs to be. She needs to be. I'd actually like to see like a Remy and Avis back to back, you know, surrounded, fight their way out. It'd be great. I mean, doesn't have to be there, but it'd be kind of fun to see. Anyway, Francine gasped. Rebecca May McCann, you apologize to Charles right now. And I love how just Remy just blows her off. That's great. And I like how you get a little bit more information on the comment she made that got her pod killed.
Why'd you delete the word might? You deleted the word might? Taking away my local language flavor, man.
Oh, okay. Well, just abort that green strike through then.
It should be right fine. Right fine or might fine? Southern's not my first language.
I'd go might or mighty fine. One of the two. Might fine. Okay. Keep the might fine. I see what you're going for.
All right.
So they raised the whole land until it wasn't fit for man or beast. Ouch. That's what ended up getting her paw killed.
Yeah, the whole of the South is like a wasteland.
So Sherman finished his march to the sea then?
No. Oh, yeah.
So I like that Remy and Charles get into this little spat, and she goes out to walk the perimeter, and she's all, someone has to protect this place. So I like that she's getting her gumption up, man. She's putting the gloves on. She's one kind of taking the reins. So I like it. That is one intense woman, Ferris said. Are you sure that's a woman? John Jacobson said with an elbow to his younger brother's ribs. John Jacobson's a dick. Let's see here. So they quiet down under their father's glare, and the group goes quiet. They watch the girls stalk up toward the rocks where they were accustomed to watching, stationing a watch. Let's see here. Oh, yeah. The Remy was in a foul mood. Avis noticed as the young woman stopped to talk to the girls. She had a something for the younger girls that needs some attention. And Virginia made a show of introducing her sister to Keela, who bowed his head and pranced. I thought it was funny when Remy reached out to touch Keela. Keela just danced away and snorted. Like, fuck you. Oh man. And even when Elsa wags her finger at him, he still just yucks it up, man. Okay, so yeah. So after this, Teague and Charles kind of wrap up with, you know, Teague trying to be like, hey, don't lose faith in me. I'm doing what I can. And I like the dialogue here. Didn't really find anything that I was like, oh my God, brah. Couple little edits. Just going from sheriff to the sheriff. On page 154, which is our down to 155, which is our final page. The men all mumbled their agreement and returned to whatever projects they had been performing before the sheriff returned with Remy and Francine and bad news. Francine caught Avis's attention. I don't mean to presume your preferences, miss, the older woman said, but my children had run off into the hills, and I've gotten such an earful about you. I'd like to get to know you. Mind helping in the kitchen? No, ma'am, not at all. So Avis is kind of finding her acceptance with the McCann clan, it looks like. People are, not so much treating her as an outsider. But, I like that you have an interesting way of speaking. Are you from England? Yeah. It kind of goes with the Coneheads. We are from France.
Yeah. Well, in the first chapter, Elsa asks her that. And at first, when I first wrote this line, I put Australia because I thought it'd be funny to put a different country.
Oh, for sure.
But I didn't know. Yeah, I don't know if that would fly or not. So. And then I didn't know how many countries I could do that with.
Right. Hey, I think the England thing works, man. It's across the pond. There's a different accent. There's also a different vernacular. I mean, there are different cultural differences. So yeah, I think it works. I mean, overall, I like the additions. The scene with the Nestors and Teague really adds to the investigation side of the burnings, and also shows more on how desperate the situation is. I like the unknown quantity of Remy, and the mystery of what she'll do or what she's not going to do. Anything against the Brodies without support or knowing from the other Nestors. I mean, is she going to? I mean, she seems like she might be or have the potential to go lone wolf. And that's what I got. Any questions for me?
I don't think so at this point.
Okay.
Let's move this party from Texas to Los Angeles.
Woohoo!
Hollywood Dreams. I'm just skimming through this real quick. All right, the last we left, we had a dead suspect. We had a beaten brother in the hospital. Got a dead girl. Got a missing girl. And we left off in the usual place we seem to leave off. At Lou's bar, drinking scotch. And now we pick it up at Musso and Frank's Grill. Like so many things in this story, I believe this is a real place.
Yes. And it was patronized by all sorts of Hollywood's rich and famous.
Is it one of those places that's still there?
Yeah, still there. You can still get food, and I think the menu really hasn't changed. I mean, a whole lot. Hmm. I mean, steaks and potatoes, you know.
Yeah, famous people still go there. Or...
Yeah, it's actually still a pretty popular place, from what I gather.
All right, right on. All right, so the year is 1941, and Detective Elijah Toome and his daughter Anna are going to a restaurant, Musso and Frank's. Toome's a little bit of a sauce hound. Anna is kind of the angel on his shoulder, gets him to chill. And Toome is feeling a little uncomfortable because he's, you know, working all the time and he's wearing cops. You know, I don't know how much editing I did on this thing. I just think I made a lot of comments.
Hey, that's all right.
Snarky comments.
I expect snark from you, my friend.
My first is where he says, I looked overworked and underpaid, and my comment is, he is overworked and underpaid. she says, you're fine. Let's see. You're fine. Just go in. Anna says, reaching a hand toward me and stiffening her lip. I kind of felt like the action was unclear in that. Maybe it was the stiffening lip thing, but I was just kind of like, does that mean she was irritated? I didn't know what the emotion being translated there was.
I gotcha. Okay.
Portrayed. Without another word, I step into the doorway and hear Anna thank something as she follows me. I just put thank you.
Oh, yeah.
My bad. We're on page 146. Moving on, 147. I didn't have I didn't really have any comments on this page. So they're just talking about the menu. Well, they got their menus, but he's grilling her a little bit on info about Danny. Danny's his old friend. She works with Danny. He's a quasi-gangster. He thinks Danny knows where the missing girl is, who's the sister of the dead girl. And so he's just bugging Anna. He's like, and she's like, come on, man. Don't be bugging me for this. I just want to have dinner. I didn't really see anything on this page that really needed editing at this point.
Woohoo!
Maybe next time.
Maybe next time.
page 147. I take the picture away and put it in my pocket because he was showing a picture. Doing that, I don't know, that guilt showing the picture thing. So they order lunch. And they see Clark Gable. And he's like, hey, he comes here often. So this is where, you know, this is one of those scenes where, downtime scenes where, Anna's like the kind of the only good thing he's got going on, and he's trying not to blow it. And so, you know, they usually start out with like some tense conversations about his drinking or about him trying to get some information or whatever, but then they settle down into trying to normalize their relationship. And I kind of enjoy these scenes. They're a nice break and shows their relationship. Two people who lost somebody who are both trying to heal and, you know, stay connected to the person they have left, even though the person they have left is kind of disappointing them in some ways. You know, Toome with his drinking and Anna with her working for Danny, because Toome feels, I get the impression from Toome, he feels a little betrayed by that.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
So, yeah, they just have a chat. I didn't really say anything until the bottom of page 148. I turn back to Anna and smile and shake my head. You always rub shoulders with these big timers. Anna's lips curl into a half smile. Well, not all of them. I meet my fair share. Since I've been casting agent for Danny, I've met some of them, but I don't give. But some don't give Silvermatic Studio the time of day. And I think my comment was, well, I know what my comment was. I don't actually know what it was like being like casting director wasn't something that was created until like I think like the freaking late 70s. Obviously they existed. That was just like their name. They didn't get that director title until, you know, way late. So I was just wondering, because I think like in the 40s, and even to some extent now, but especially back in those early years of film, those early decades, actors were actually contracted with film studios. I'm not sure how it worked, but I didn't think they were really free to go from studio to studio easily. So I was just curious. I mean, I don't know. I don't want you to have to spend a lot of time freaking researching this crap. Maybe it's not even worth changing, but I just made a note there, something to think about.
Gotcha. Yeah, I know. There were some actors unions that were, a lot of mob involvement in Hollywood during the time. I got to do a little bit more reading on it because I know you're not wrong, but I think that was also a part of the time where some of that stuff, the way it used to be done, was starting to change, that kind of the cusp. But I know you're not wrong on that though. I just got to figure out kind of when that stuff kind of started to change, if that falls in line with my story, or if I should, you know, pay a little attention to that. And maybe, you know, do a little edit on it. I don't know. We'll see. Thanks for pointing that out.
It's such a small part. I don't even know if it's worth addressing. Like, it's such a small part of your story. I mean,
it really is. It really is. Yeah, you're probably right.
All right. Page 149. The waitress comes back to take their order. My only comment on here was the waitress's name was Harriet. And I said, Harriet, Harriet.
What was that? What's that from?
So I Married an Axe Murderer.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Yes, exactly. The voice totally had me and I was like, okay, I know where that's from. I can't think of the name though.
He does the exact same poem about every girl he breaks up with.
Yes.
The first one. I don't know if the first one was Harriet or if Harriet was the one he was actually dating and ends up being with, but Harriet. I don't know what kind of poetry that's called when it's like to music like that.
Beat?
The poet.
Is it beat poetry? Would that be beat?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it's beat.
Yeah. Yep. For those of you who don't know, Steve's a published poet.
I am, and I know it. Yeah.
Man, that's the stuff that gets you the big bucks.
Yep, straight.
Page 150. At the bottom of 150, we go back to Silvermatic Film Studio, which is the studio that Toom's friend Danny owns and Anna works at. All right, this turn just, I don't know what happened here, but this transition is wild. He's eating dinner with Anna, and then we're transported to the film studio. Was I not supposed to read this far? Because I read this far.
Oh, no, it's fine. It's fine. Okay. I knew there had to be a transition, but I wasn't sure how I was going to do it yet. So, but yeah, thanks for pointing it out.
Thanks for rubbing the salt in the wound. No, that's all right. Okay. Yeah, because they're at dinner at Musso's and Frank's, and suddenly he's like, where's Anna, crossing the crime scene barrier? So apparently some stuff went down at Silvermatic while Anna was there, and now he's, you know, there to get her. So yeah, definitely a scene missing. So they find a dead body there. And Toom is not assigned to this dead body, but he's kind of like trying to slyly ask the investigators questions about it, but they're kind of on to him. I'm a little confused why, if it's not their case, why Monty is there. And I say so on page 152. Relax, Monty, I say, backing away from him because he's like, hey, don't get yourself in trouble, Tomb. Monty being Tomb's partner. What's Monty doing there? If this isn't him and Tomb's case, why would they call him? How would he get there?
I haven't decided on that yet. There's some cogs turning, but I haven't decided on anything yet.
Oh, I like this line at the bottom. Well, since you're here, Carl says, he's a detective, and then pauses for a beat. We've got a gunshot victim shit twice from a small caliber gun.
I love it. Shit twice.
I've been like, yeah, I'd shit twice if somebody shot me.
Oh, at least twice.
That's my favorite wrong word usage was tree drunks for a long time, but I think it's shit twice now.
Shit twice is a pretty damn good one.
All right, page 153. So he's kind of surveying the scene, still talking to Carl a little bit. They kind of make fun of each other's drinking and drug habits. And he goes in another room to talk to Anna, see if she's okay. And she says that she had found a file, like somebody showed up and shot the guard and took off running. And she said she could not find the file in the cabinet.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I comment, I thought he already gave this file to Tomb.
He did. He did. That was a continuity error on my end. I was going to do something else there. And I think I ended up writing that in for some reason, because sometimes I'm dumb.
Yeah, maybe you're just stoned.
You know, it's possible.
Page 154. I think this is all you gave me this turn. Page 154. Yes. Or the last page, Anna opens a different book and flips a few pages of carbons. Page she stops on has three carbons exposed. The Pally House is in Santa Monica, right? So this is new. She's looking through Danny's entries. And Danny has the girl's address. So the last draft, Danny did not know where the girl was, but this draft he does.
Yeah, I wanna do more with Danny in this draft, and I'm trying out some things.
And I just wrote that's an interesting twist.
I was hoping it would come off as interesting. I'm glad it did.
Let's see. Well, most of your twists are interesting. You just a lot of them.
They get muddled.
Do you? Yeah. A little twisty. All right.
Indeed. Thanks, man.
Do you think he's hiding that Elsa girl at the Pally House? Maybe, I say, and notice an approaching voice that sounds a lot like Danny's. Shit. Or is that shot?
It's shit.
I close the ledger and the checkbooks as Anna turns her chair. I dash around the desk to join her and wait for the person of interest to enter the office. And throw that on top of the fact that he's already got a picture of Danny and Richter, who is right now your most probable bad guy. And that puts Danny in a whole nother shade of light.
Yes, it does. For sure. Definitely getting rid of Vivian kind of really made Danny's character a lot less complex to figure out.
Okay. Vivian being Tomb's dead wife.
Yes.
Alrighty. So, have any questions for me?
No, I think I'm good for now, man.
All right. Well, you know where to find me.
I do.
Well, it's getting late, so let's go ahead and wrap this up. I forgot in the opening to pimp our Patreon, patreon.com/Pacific Novel Project, and our developing website PacificNovelProject.com. But at our Patreon, we have like different tiers. For $2, you can join our monthly book club, where Steve and I talk about a book every month, and got some bonus content where if there's something in the book that really interested us, but didn't have enough time to dwell on, we hammer it down in another podcast. Our last one was The Bird's Nest by Shirley Jackson, which you can find on Patreon right now. I would say our reviews were mixed on that one.
Yeah, really mixed.
But Shirley Jackson, pretty interesting person, and we're actually going to talk about her a little bit more in another podcast. Book that we're working on right now is for the next one is The Buried Giant by, I should have brought his name up.
The dude that wrote The River Runs Through It or whatever.
Did he write The River Runs? I know he wrote Remains of the Day.
Remains of the Day, that's it. No, it's not The River Runs Through, it's Remains of the Day.
Izawa Ishikuru or something like that? Oh, man.
I should have wrote it down, I didn't.
I know.
Yeah.
It's so unprofessional.
It is, but hey, you know.
So The Buried Giant, it's pretty much the opposite of Remains of the Day. So that's why we tried it out. Seems pretty interesting concept. And we'll be recording that pretty soon. That'll be our next book. And then we'll choose another book. We got a whole list of books. We also take suggestions. We love suggestions. So if anybody's listening out there and wants to drop some suggestions on us, do it. Do it now. Do it.
Do it. Kill me. Kill me.
You can do it.
You can do it. Yeah, I like it.
Woohoo. How many do-its from the movies are? Are there?
God.
A lot.
There's a lot. Do it.
Our favorite seems to be the Starskin Hutch one, though. We use that a lot.
Do it. Do it. Do it. Do it.
Do it now. Do it now. Do it now. All right. That's all I got, man. How about you?
That's all I got, too, man. I do got to say, though, The Buried Giant actually inspired a short story idea I'm going to give a crack at at some point. Oh, wow. But I'll talk more about it, you know, after I get it done.
Okay, sweet. Maybe we'll workshop that one day.
Maybe after, you know, when we start doing smaller pieces again, for sure. But yeah, that's all I got.
Good night to you, sir.
And good night to you.
And good night to everybody who's listening.